As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Amy, if you're driving around St. Louis, I know I told people that they are in grave danger.
Yeah, that was probably a poor choice of words.
No, it's called a tease.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because you drove around
like you're now you're white knuckled driving around like, oh my God, what happened?
That's like if Michael Calhoun had breaking news and said, if you're on Highway 40, watch out. I'm going to tell you why in 1 second.
Sinkholes are popping up all over the area.
You know what's crazy? Three separate giant sinkholes emerged in the city of St. Louis this weekend, swallowing streets, damaging homes, and raising serious questions. I drove either over or right by the 14th and Park sinkhole hours before it opened up. Like, there was no sinkhole, I don't think, unless I drove right by. It was night. And I'm trying to think if I drove over that area or next to it. But it's so weird when you're in an area and the road disappears. It's just gone. It is a fear unlocked.
Well, it is for me. And it's one of those things where it's just probably never going to happen to me. But I do think about, it's like those dumb fears, like being wrongfully imprisoned and that kind of thing.
I don't know. It feels a little cavalier. I mean,
yeah,
three opened up.
Well,
three sinkholes in downtown and places where you drive.
True. But there's a lot of surface area around this city. So the likelihood of driving over that one spot as the sinkhole opens up is very, very low. But I do think about that because I've seen parked cars get swallowed up by sinkholes. And I think, what if I had been in that car? And inevitably, when the sinkhole opens up, there's water down there. Not always, but a lot of times. How do you get out of the car?
So I don't know. I thought about that too. And what's funny is it was, how do I get out of the car? And then immediately went to all my stuff that's in my car. Like, how would I get my stuff out?
Yeah.
I need my stuff. And I pulled up here's where I drove. I drove the roundabout at 14th and Park on Friday night. So Friday night at 8 p.m., 14th and Park, there's a roundabout. And I don't know where the sinkhole is. I don't know if that sinkhole is north of the roundabout. If it were, I drove over it, right? Before it collapsed. If it's south of the roundabout, I just missed it. It might have collapsed already.
Is 14th and Park south of 40?
Yes.
Right? It's like on the way to Lafayette Square or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And because if you get off at 14th, you're headed east on 40, you get off at 14th, you turn right. And that's that roundabout, 14th and Park, is what I took. And again, like I said, I need to go drive down and see, did I drive over that sinkhole hours before it collapsed, or is the sinkhole south of the roundabout and I didn't drive over it? But that's pretty crazy.
It is, because I've been that way a bunch of times, right? So it's frightening. Rasheen Aldridge, who is an alderman here in the city, here's what his quote was about it. I do know the one on Cass has something to do with the sewer issue, and this is a sidebar. Yes, I guess there are some old brick sewers, like very, very old sewers underneath the city streets, and some of them have collapsed. And with the rain coming in and then the collapsing of the sewers, then eventually the ground above it gives way. And he says it sounds like a pipe has broken, and it's an MSD thing, which is the Metropolitan St. Louis Sewer District. So they are responsible for fixing it. But maybe I have to be in the minority here. I don't think most people think about sinkholes regularly. But if they keep popping up all over the city, like this is three over a weekend. And yeah, we had a lot of rain. We've had a decent amount of rain in the last couple of weeks, so you can expect more of these to happen. But I think sinkholes are absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, and months ago, several months ago, maybe a year ago, there were sinkholes that popped up more in the downtown corridor, right? Do you remember near, kind of not far from where we are, in the downtown corridor, there were some sinkholes in front of businesses. And there was a car in one of the sinkholes because it had it was a parked car that fell below the city streets, which again is so terrifying. I picture the world of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Like in the sewer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just picture rats.
See, I don't. I think of the movie 2012, like where the roads are just opening up and swallowing whole buildings. Because of the calamity that's happening. Todd is watching us on Facebook, and he says, back in 2017, Wolf Branch Middle School sank over 2 feet in one weekend in Swansea, and he said it was because of sinkholes.
Oh, my gosh. Remember the sinkhole in the athletic fields?
In Alton.
Giant, yes!
Yeah.
Oh!
That was a mine. It was like an old mine that was down there.
That collapsed.
That stuff, there could have been, because it was right in the center of what, like two or three fields?
Yeah, I mean,
soccer
there could have
fields?
Been kids and families, so dangerous.
That could have been really bad.
Yeah, the sinkholes are not great.
I don't know what's going on here, except we are, I don't feel like we are on solid ground. And I don't, that's not a pun.
Well, and we know that some of the money, right, was water infrastructure with the city. I guess this would fall under that umbrella. If we use some of the RAM settlement money on water infrastructure?
That's a great question, because I thought the same thing, because that was one of the main things that people were talking about when they were asking everybody how they felt the RAM settlement money should be spent downtown. A lot of that, or in the city limits, a lot of the response was about the sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I'm assuming that's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But if you have a sewer system, which this texter says that the failures in the sewer system are over 100 years old and that's what's causing the problems. Well, yeah, if that's true, now that we can see these sinkholes, now I think people, because you probably heard, what do we care about the water system? Like, why would we spend money on that? There are other things we can do. Well, if sinkholes start opening up all over the city, I think people would be like, oh, yeah, maybe we should take care
of that.
There are
the sinkholes, plus we've seen the pipes that have broken and flooded major thoroughfares in the city as well. And on Lindell, that was there forever. And so, yes, the system does need to be repaired. And I know that the millions and millions of dollars that were allocated toward the water infrastructure is still really a drop in the bucket, no pun intended, for how much it will cost to fix this. While we're on the topic of the city, before we eventually get to our tournament of negligence, I did want to note in the Post-Dispatch a story about the city manager. We've talked to Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez about her proposal to have a city manager. A lot of cities do. A lot of the surrounding municipalities in St. Louis County have city managers in addition to a mayor. Now, Megan Green, the president of the Board of Aldermen, and now Mayor Kara Spencer, have a lot of disagreements. It's crazy because, like I said, the Board of Aldermen, all very progressive. Megan Green is represents the most progressive side of the Board of Aldermen. Kara Spencer, now the mayor, so they disagree politically, but they do both support the idea of a city manager. However, as the Post-Dispatch story notes, they have their disagreements on how or who should hold the power to hire and fire the city manager. board president Megan Green said that the board of aldermen must have a significant say. Kara Spencer said their quote is she worries about too many cooks in the kitchen and good job candidates may have, you know, other cities wanting their services. That will be less drama than the city of St. Louis. Basically, Kara Spencer saying if we argue about this, if we have too many cooks in the kitchen, if we've got to get through all of this, some city managers are just going to say, that's it. I'm going to a city with less drama. I'm going to a city where there's some consensus on how my job is going to function.
And we've seen how things have devolved in the Board of Aldermen meetings that happen in the last several months. We've seen it a couple of times. I think that I agree with Spencer on this. Again, I don't have a real strong opinion about it. But if it's a person who is really supposed to help take the load off the mayor, then why would the mayor not have a huge say, if not all the say, in who that person is? Especially if the mayor is in favor of there being somebody in that position. And then it makes the mayor accountable to it. Because if you run on, we're going to fix the city services, we're going to make sure we're on top of all the stuff that needs to be done, the trash, the roads, the potholes, all the boring stuff that help make people's day-to-day lives a little bit easier. If we're on top of all of that, and if I ran on that, then I am responsible for the person I hire to help get that stuff done. And I want to hire somebody who I think can do the job. If I'm the mayor, that's the way I see it. And I think that's probably right. Because I don't want the Board of Aldermen to, you know, get involved and a couple of people don't like the city manager and then it starts a whole dramatic thing. And I don't know. I feel like that would get too messy.
And that's one of the reasons why Alderwoman Velasquez proposed the idea of a city manager amid, you know, the city services declining, not getting done. It's let's just get someone in there to do the non-political stuff, the non-controversial stuff, just the very basics of city government. And the Board of Aldermen can keep arguing, but they shouldn't be arguing about trash pickup. Let's get someone to just take care of that. And that's what the city manager should do. And that's why it was popularized in the 20th century by so many major cities, because it just takes the politics out of the day-to-day services.
Yeah, so if that is the idea that it is supposed to be a nonpartisan thing. Mm-hmm.
And a non-politician, by the way.
Which
is a non-politician who's appointed.
Yeah. Which I also get not wanting the mayor from the other side, and this is the opposing argument, not wanting the mayor to be able to just make that call unilaterally on who it is. Because then it does effectively become a political position. Mm-hmm. But I almost feel like, not almost, I do feel like if you ran on this and you think this is the most important thing you can do as a mayor, you should be able to hire somebody who does that job. That's where I stand on it now. I could be talked out of that position, but the bottom line is St. Louis has to do the day-to-day a whole lot better than it has.
And
we have,
sinkhole.
Speaking of negligence.
Perfect.
Speaking of,
yes.
You know, this show has been negligent. We have a champion in our tournament of negligence. We will tell you about that champion when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX. Chris and Amy show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
We have a champion.
We do have a champion in our Tournament of Negligence.
No! And
the Tournament of Negligence was born out of our...
Negligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we put together the Mott's Madness Pizza Tournament.
We had a few faux pas. We had a few peccadillos. We may or may not have failed to pay attention to details.
Right. Which does happen sometimes.
It happens most of the time, honestly. I don't think details
it's not our thing.
Our strong suit.
Yeah. I mean, who needs details?
But because of our incompetence, negligence, and inattention to detail, we have fun things like Alfonso's winning the Mott's Madness Tournament and the Tournament of Negligence Championship.
Yep, the Tournament of Negligence Championship has been decided. We had our final contestants. They were the one seed, Forgetting Your Child Is in the Car, versus the 12 seed, dropping your child into the gorilla pit.
R.I.P. Harambe.
So really, it's dropping your child into the zoo enclosure, which does happen sometimes.
But Ranj, I do think you're kind of burying the lead here. I think we need to acknowledge how the dropping your child into the gorilla pit was originally submitted. The format of the original submission was simply Harambe.
Yeah, somebody texted in and said Harambe, and I knew what they meant. I knew they meant dropping your kid into the enclosure at the zoo, which is very bad. And you will be stunned to know this was like one of our... I think this was the closest result we had of the entire tournament.
It was. No, 100%. It was the closest we've ever had.
So, dropping your child into a zoo enclosure defeats forgetting your kid is in the car. With 50.7% of the vote.
Wow.
Forgetting your child is in the car came up with 49.3%. So, congratulations to that submitter from earlier, who texted the show at the beginning of the day. While they were at work, and they said, I would like to thank my family and friends and the community of St. Louis. It was hard to barely text in a sentence and be lucky enough. Chris understood my dry humor. Hopefully with this win, Harambe can rest peacefully in gorilla heaven. I don't think anybody has let Harambe rest. And I got to tell you, as I have, if you've ever listened before, I know I've brought this up in the past.
Yeah.
But for a very long time, like years, and this was what, Harambe happened 9 years ago?
Feels like 100 years ago.
So for people who don't know what happened, a child fell into the enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo. Harambe was the gorilla who picked up the kid, and they didn't know what he was going to do. They were afraid that he might hurt the child, so they shot Harambe and killed him.
The child was fine?
Child was fine.
Yeah.
So the Cincinnati Zoo, for like a good 2 to 3 years after that happened, like they had this hippopotamus that was born named Fiona, and they would post about the hippo, and no, every single comment was about Harambe. Like, they were just getting inundated with people making fun of them over Harambe, which it finally died down. But
I got
great pleasure in looking at the Cincinnati Zoo's account because of it. Anyway.
They were lambasted over Harambe.
That is our champion of the Tournament of Negligence. So dropping your kid in the zoo enclosure is considered extremely negligent. In fact, it is considered the most negligent.
Do you know, it's amazing that our own John Hancock almost dropped Johnny Jr. into Big Cat Country.
Yeah, you know, he talked about that on Friday.
St. Louis Zoo.
And he downplayed it.
What?
He said it really wasn't that close.
I think he's backtracking.
I agree with you.
I think George Ann was listening, his beloved wife.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she didn't realize how close John Jr. came to Big Cat Country.
Well, he did say the in-laws were not happy when it occurred. But they were all, everybody was there when it happened.
I love that. See, that Harambe is the most negligent thing you can do, period. Not, you know, I keep thinking that this is like negligence pertaining to children, but it's not. We had everything. We had like forgetting to blow out a candle. That's so dangerous.
They could burn down your house.
Yeah.
It could kill people that way.
It could. You know, so the candle thing is a big one.
Did we have forgetting the pizza was in the oven? Oh, yeah, forgetting food was in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty negligent.
What about not buying toilet paper? I went like 5 days without toilet paper in my apartment. That's hard to do.
It is.
It's lazy and negligent.
And you're using things you're not supposed to use and not supposed to flush.
Right.
Yep.
You could clog a pipe.
You could destroy an entire sewer system and create a sinkhole.
What if me running out of toilet paper was directly led to the sinkholes at 14th and Park?
You know, it's not off the table.
One of the city officials looks down and goes, was somebody flushing paper towels?
Yeah.
Quilted?
That's what it was. This texter says, why do I feel like somebody will come up with the idea of putting all the trash in the sinkholes?
Okay, it's creative.
It is.
It's creative. You got to fill them with something.
Oh, Kevin. And we have a texter from Kevin from Manchester.
Come on, Kevin.
His text says, if you think things are bad this month, wait till next month. That's when we observe Sinkholes de Mayo.
That was a rough.
Oh my God. Do we?
I just want to say, guys. Kevin,
I don't know if we should block Kevin or not.
You know, Kevin, listen, this is a serious show. We never want people to text 314-436-7900 with jokes like that.
Yeah.
That's not the purpose of our text
line. That's not what it's here for.
Kevin.
I am beside myself. Beside myself that somebody came up with that and wrote it out. Sinkholes de Mayo. We should have to name our Cinco de Mayo celebration Sinkholes de Mayo if this keeps up.
I will say, if we get more sinkholes in the next couple of days, that's probably what we're going to do.
Sajacy with two outs in the ninth. Sajacy swings and misses. This ball game has come to an end. The Mets swept the series. They won all four games, winning today 7-4.
It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX. This was a rough sports weekend for St. Louis, with the exception of City SC, which earned a draw.
Which is worse than a loss.
No, it isn't.
It absolutely
isn't. It isn't.
Is.
You get a point. You get something for the tie, and they did have a goal, which was waved off, which I think is BS. They should have won. At any rate, we bring in our studio analyst on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. The Blues have a game tonight. The Cardinals have a game tonight. We've got Scott Warman with us on the Chris and Amy Show. What's up, Scott?
I think if MLS needs to go to 3-on-3 overtime. What do you think, Chris?
Thank you.
That's just way too much running for those guys.
Well,
that field is huge.
It is.
Well, 1-on-1, really.
Just a 1-on-1 soccer match?
1-on-1 soccer match. Yeah, they just die of fatigue, I guess. Well, listen, the ties aren't fun, but Scott, the losses for the Cardinals weren't a ton of fun either. They're struggling on the road. Getting swept was not great. Your take on where the Cardinals are right now?
Well, obviously, the good start from an offensive standpoint has gone silent here. I will say this. It wasn't as bad as the pre- and post-game show I worked on Sunday Night Baseball when they lost the Red Sox that night. That was fun. Actually, Ronji, that might have been the fastest post game we ever had on KMOX on the Cardinal Radio Network, because there really wasn't that much to say. But anyway, I digress.
And you wanted to get out before the calls started?
Yeah, no calls.
Yeah.
Sunday night, it's time to go home. It was a doubleheader day.
Yeah. Nope.
But, Amy, the offense is just sputtering. Now, I will say this. In fact, I was just talking to our producer, like a pregame on FanDuel tonight for baseball. You know, when you run up against good pitching, that's going to happen. I'm not trying to make excuses, but it is a fact. I mean, we've all seen baseball, and it is the great equalizer. I always say goaltending in hockey is just like pitching in baseball for the respective sports. You get great goaltending, you can go a long way. You have great pitching, you can go a long way. And you add that to the top of that lineup for the Mets, which is just, that's tough. One of the best in the business. And obviously it spelled doom for the Cardinals for four straight games. And obviously you got to just go down to Atlanta, where a team is surprisingly struggling, and try to take advantage of that. But you're facing Schwellenbach tonight. You've got Strider, who's back, who's pitching tomorrow. So you're going to face some more tough pitching as the Cardinals take on a Braves team that's trying to find themselves right now, which I think a lot of people are surprised that they haven't gotten off to a great start. The good news, at least if you're a Braves fan, is the fact that I guess Ronald Acuna is going to be coming back sooner rather than later, and obviously he's a big part of that team.
Yeah, he's coming back, but they've also suspended him. So, because they suspended him because he criticized the manager for not the home run, but the Jared Kelnick thought he had hit a home run, and then he dogged it, and he got thrown out at second base, and he was criticized for that. And then Acuna said something to the effect of, on Twitter, if that were me, they would have pulled me from the game. So he's been suspended. At any rate, this Mets series, I know that in April, we're getting toward the end of April now. I know you don't want to take too much away from games that happen in April or try to extrapolate it into like what that means for the season. But I almost wonder if this wasn't like maybe this was a fairly big series and maybe it did tell you quite a bit, or at least it tells you where the Cardinals stand up against really good teams like the Mets.
But I will counter that, Chris. I mean, you took the Phillies 2 out of 3. I think they're pretty good. An Astros team who I still think is not off to the best of the starts, but they have some formidable pitching and a formidable lineup, and you took 2 out of 3. I think the equation here, for whatever reason, in the first month is you can't win on the road. I mean, your only victory on the road is against Paul Skenes. Figure that one out when you can. Everything else is a loss. You got the game's best pitcher, and that's the one game you're victorious in on the road. So whatever the road woes are, they've definitely got to figure it out. But I think more importantly is the fact that this team has got to figure some things out from an offensive standpoint. And maybe Mason Wynn, who's going to be back, I believe, either tonight or tomorrow. He finished his rehab with Memphis over the weekend, had a couple of home runs over the weekend. Maybe he's that spark, that energizer that this team needs from an offensive standpoint. But I think the other part of it, Chris and Amy, to be honest with you, is it's going to be a very interesting decision that the Cardinals are going to have to make as far as who's going to get sent down when Mason Wynn is activated, because I don't see how you take Thomas Ajayi, who was basically your offensive hero over the weekend and has played the part, how you can send him back down to Memphis. I mean, I'm not there. I'm not management. I'm not a coach. I didn't play the game professionally, but for me on the sidelines, I just don't see how Ajayi goes down. I think you're going to have to make a very tough decision whether you want to send Luke and Baker down where you lose that power right-handed bat, or Ciani, who you're really comfortable with a guy that's, your defensive expert late in games out in the outfield. So I don't know what you guys think, but I can't see how Ajayi goes back down.
Yeah, probably not at this point. What I am interested in, though, and it's on the other side, and that is the pitching, and they have been doing the six-man rotation for a little bit. I believe their intent is to extend it into May because they're trying to keep everybody healthy. Steven Matz warmed up, to pitch out of the bullpen over the weekend. So there's that. Do you think this is working? And is this a good idea? They continue with this in trying to make sure guys stay healthy.
Well, so Matz is back to the bullpen. As you said, Chrissy warmed up and he will be available, for tonight's game as well, because you've really emptied the tank at times. With this bullpen, especially with the usage that you had in Friday night's game where you had to go to the bullpen in the fifth inning. With all that being said, when you think about it, I do like it. And here's why. And I think we have to put ourselves into the position of the here and now, Chris, instead of what used to be. Because let's face it, how many complete games do we have in Major League Baseball so far this season? I think maybe one, that's it. So you look at the whole thing, and you even look at what you've seen from parts of this pitching staff. Just let's go to last year. You see guys running out of gas in August and September. So if your team is in it, you want to have those guys with a little extra gas left in the tank. And in fact, we talked about this on our pregame show last Wednesday when Matt's got the start. And Matt's had a very impressive start. So for me, if you got a guy that's interchangeable like that in a Steven Matz, yes, I think it's incumbent on this team, not on the here and now, Chris, but I think later on in the season, you're going to have guys that are going to have a lot more gas left in the tank in August and September when you decide to do the six-man rotation from time to time. Now, they decided to move Matz out of that rotation for the short term, just because you had that day off on Thursday. The thought process is, apparently Ollie told the media over the weekend, is he'll probably get reinserted. But right now they want to try to help out the bullpen with the usage that they had. Plus they can use that Thursday day off after they finish up this road trip.
Well, Scott, switching over to Winnipeg, the gateway to the west of Canada. I learned last time the Blues played Winnipeg that that is their nickname. It's a big game tonight. Obviously, it's the playoffs. That's the cliche. Here's what I'm most concerned about, Scott, and this was something that concerned me when the Blues were in the middle of their 12-game winning streak, and that was letting teams back into it in the final minutes of a game. They still eked out victories in the regular season, but that type of trend, that habit in the postseason will inevitably come back to haunt you, and it did in Game 1 because the Blues were in control for a good part of that game before they let Winnipeg take the lead and get that victory.
You're preaching to the choir.
Well, thank you very much. That's all I had. No,
it's spot on. I've seen this movie so many times in my life with this hockey team, with great teams, whether it's Bernie's teams of the 80s and Holy and Shanny's teams of the 90s, or even go to Al and Prong's teams, is protecting a lead. The one time that I can remember consistently that a team had a lead and never protected it, Amy, is you go back to Chiefs team, Craig Berube's team back in 2018-19 when he got rolling. They didn't stop. They kept going, as all these coaches say, the verbiage is going north. You continue to put pressure on your opponent, and you can't sit back on leads. And you're exactly right. We saw this even during the 12-game win streak. We even saw it even before or even after that. And this team obviously knows they have to do it, but saying is one thing, doing is another. But to just have one shot on goal, especially as good of a team as Winnipeg is, you just can't do it. And again, it's that top line of Shifley and Kyle Connor that absolutely burned the Blues eventually with them losing that game. I will say this, that if you go back 2 weeks from, I guess, today, when the Blues were in Winnipeg, the Blues played for the first two periods a much, much better game than they did against Winnipeg. Now, granted, there's a lot more on the line this time around than what you had in the regular season. But with all that being said, if you watch Winnipeg, they come at you hard, especially on their defense with a forecheck. They're trying to force errors. It's kind of reminiscent of the 2019 Blues team where they constantly forechecked. And I thought the Blues possessed the puck a lot more on the offensive end, which took away from them being Winnipeg trying to force that issue. But I thought the Blues handled the pressure a lot better. They didn't have as many defensive zone turnovers, and that's what you're going to have to do. The other part of it is not only having more than just one shot on goal, you have to continuously have traffic in front of Hellebuck. Let's face it, he's the best goaltender maybe in the world. And so in order to get something by the best goaltender in the world, you got to keep having traffic in front of Hellebuck. And I think those are at least two keys that this team needs to have and have a focus of. I mean, yes, it's disappointing, but when you look at it, this is the best team in hockey by far.
Yeah.
And you were with them. You had them on the ropes for 40 minutes. Just kind of going back to your original statement, it's a matter of closing the deal out in the final 20 minutes. And again, Blues can't play protective hockey. You got to keep going after them. You got to keep firing the puck at the net. You got to continue to have offensive time zone, because eventually a team like that, they're going to burn you. And it could be a Colorado. It could be a Dallas. Especially if you get past this round, you're going to have to face one of those two elite teams as well. So, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You've got to do a better job in protecting the lead, and you can't do it with just the defensive shell.
And I'll just add, this is where I hope the youth of the Blues is an advantage. And what I mean by that, you had Neighbors, Bolduc, and Snuggerud all playing their first playoff games. If you had some seasoned veterans who had gotten into the habit of letting their foot off the gas pedal, you know, at the end of games, that concerns me more than maybe these young players who now were slapped in the face with the speed of postseason hockey in the NHL, and maybe they can't adjust. And if you have your young guys adjust to that pace of play to the end of games, maybe there's hope that the Blues will get out of that rut they're in.
Absolutely. 100%. I agree with you. And I'll tell you what, looking at some of these guys, they just don't look out of place. I mean,
right.
You know, Neighbors is obviously a little bit more grizzled, quote unquote, so to speak, with as far as, you know, him playing in his first playoff game. Bolduc is just his emergence over these last 2-3 months had just like blown my mind. It's like all of a sudden this light went on. And Snuggerud, well, I don't think he has the physical attributes yet, you know, because the NHL is obviously faster and stronger than what he dealt with in college. But just his game from a mental standpoint, he doesn't seem to be out of place. He gets back on defense, which is one of the things that a lot of these young kids don't know. They're just all about offense, offense, offense when they're coming out of college or juniors or what have you. So the mental aptitude of the game for Snuggerud, he doesn't look out of place at all. But they're going to learn the real physicality of a game when obviously we're playing in playoff hockey. And I love the physical game that the Blues play because, again, we always go back to 2019, or at least I do, because that's the most success that this hockey team ever had. They were playing physical. I mean, literally, you go back, you watch any of those series, whether it's Winnipeg, Dallas, right on through to the finals of Boston, Game 7, you could see the Bruins were just worn down because the Blues pounded them, kept hitting them, and that's what we saw in Game 1 against Winnipeg, and I hope that continues again tonight, too.
Scott Warman, Blues play tonight at 6:30. The Cardinals, right before that, get started at 6:15. I swear you better bring us 2 wins tonight, or I am going to lose it.
All right. I'll do my very best just for you, Raji.
Thank you, Scott.
Sorry, buddy.
Scott Warman, studio analyst on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. You can see him on Cardinals and Blues coverage. We have Cardinals baseball tonight on KMOX, 5:20 for the pregame show, 6:15 for the first pitch. And I should also tell you that we have the Gas House Gang at 12 noon, right in the middle of your lunch hour. You can listen to Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and me. We will talk about this brutal sports weekend that the city of St. Louis endured. And we will hope for wins tonight from these two teams. They need to win. Everybody lost. Battlehawks lost.
Well, come on. We stop harping on it. You need to turn your attitude around.
All right, well, I'm not the one playing.
Turn that frown upside down.
I'm not the one who's out there on the ice or on the field. They need to do that.
Okay.
We're going to win. It's Amy Marks Coors. I'm Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Oh, no, they won't let him throw it in. Lozier blows the whistle and the game is over. Well, I have not understood a lot of these calls tonight. Vancouver doesn't understand this one. They have 3 or 4 guys talking to Lozier, but the head referee says, we are done in St. Louis, a final of nothing, nothing.
Ah, yes. Nothing, nothing. A tie from City SC.
Should have been a win. They were screwed by the refs.
I forgot. I keep talking about how ties are un-American. So is not knowing when the game ends. But anyway, before we get into that.
It's baseball. You don't know when the game ends either. It could be 5 hours.
It could be two and a half. Game's going to end.
After 9 innings.
You cannot tell somebody.
It's not a clock-based game.
I'm going to the ball game tonight. I will be done by this time. You can't tell them.
The old 75-minute ball game. Anyway, let's counteract this un-American tie.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now you can get a delicious McRib sandwich with a large order of America's favorite fries and a medium Coke.
Oh, beautiful.
We've just got to do our part in preserving the American way. Every time the sport of soccer tries to do something un-American, like end in a scoreless tie, and you don't know when. Like, it was a surprise ending in a game that ended in a tie with zero scoring. Have you ever heard of anything more un-American than that?
Well, first of all, you
Communism?
Know I... I disagree with the premise.
Which premise?
Un-American to end in a tie?
It's so un-American.
You ever heard of the War of 1812 or Vietnam?
The White House.
That was a stale. We learned nothing out of the Vietnam War.
Would think that we'd stop tying. We'd go, listen, it didn't work.
Well,
then,
it's a clearly it very American.
Now.
It is a very American
it's
thing
un-American.
That we do. Yeah, I don't have a. I don't mind. You guys were complaining about the time at the end, and I was just having this conversation with a friend. on Saturday.
Sorry, the time, how the refs arbitrarily say when the game is over.
Well, it's not arbitrary. They are keeping time. It's just that you don't know. Like, I don't mind it. I think there's something a little unique about having a pretty good idea of when the game is about to, and you know within a minute when it's going to end. Mm-hmm. I don't mind because it's the only sport that does it. If every sport did that, I think it would be a little much.
And then, like,
but
they
I don't mind it.
End baseball in the third inning. Game's over.
Actually, I tell you, I sat through some baseball games that I wish would have ended in the third or fourth inning.
Yeah.
So I can get down with that.
Man, if hockey games were two periods instead of three, the Blues would be killing it.
They would have won game one.
They would have won.
Don't you wish they would have stopped it in the second
100%.
Intermission?
100%.
See? Now you get it. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, we will talk about a lot of stuff that's happened. National politics, and Chris Saliza, who is with us every Monday, political commentator, joins the show next.